Good morning and happy Sabbath. Welcome to Sacramento Central Study Hour. We are so glad that you could worship with us, whether here in the sanctuary or abroad. We hope that you will be blessed today by this service. For our first song, we're going to be singing hymn number 184, Jesus Paid It All. We will be singing the first three verses. Jesus paid it all. If there's a favorite hymn that you would like to request, you can go ahead and request it online at saccentral.org and select hymn request. Make sure to put the hymn number on your name so that we can credit you, and we'll be sure to sing your favorite hymn during our next services. For our next hymn, we're going to be singing hymn number 318, Whiter Than Snow. We will be singing verses 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
Let us bow our heads for opening prayer. Lord Jesus, thank you so much for this Sabbath day. Thank you that we can worship you in spirit and in truth. I ask, Lord, now that as we continue with our service, you be with Brother Brett as he presents the lesson study. Please open our hearts and our minds to be receptive of your spirit. Forgive us of our sins, Lord. Hide us behind your cross. In Christ's name we pray, amen. For our lesson study today, we'll be hearing from Brother Brett. Thank you and happy Sabbath.
So today we are in lesson number 2 out of our wonderful lesson where we're going to be talking about lessons of faith from Joshua, chapter number 2. And the chapter title for today is Surprised by Grace. If you like this lesson and you feel like you would like a copy for yourself or you'd like to share it with somebody else in the future, maybe you have somebody in mind as you listen to this lesson, because we're going to be going over a lot of what it talks about, surprised by grace and what second chances are. So if you'd like a copy of this to be able to share with somebody, we can send you a free CD or DVD of this, and you can just call us up at 916-457-6511. Or if it's easier, you can email us at csh@saccentral.org. Give us the offer, which is number C202-541, and we would love to be able to send you a copy of lesson number 2 of the lesson, Surprised by Grace. So as we are normally accustomed to doing, we'll start off with the memory text. The memory text always kind of guides us to what we're going to be talking about. So the memory text, I'll go ahead and read it straight out of the lesson, and it is from Hebrews chapter 11, verse 31, straight out of the lesson. It says this: by faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe, when she had received the spies with peace. Right? By faith. I love that. By faith, Rahab was able to do a lot. She was able to have her life spared, and she was saved because she believed and because she had faith. So because she had faith and she believed, that means that she was able to live, but we also know that there was a whole city that fell into destruction and that perished because they did not have faith and that they did not believe. So a lot can be done through faith. I think many of us who are watching, listening, or are here today, we know that a lot can be done by faith. If we really have faith and we wait on the Lord, and we oftentimes will see his miracles and what he does for us. So just a little synopsis, a little introduction to this is today we're going to be basically going over Joshua chapter 2. It brings us into Joshua chapter 9 for one of the stories here, but mainly we're going to be focusing on Joshua chapter 2. And the main focus is on second chances. And second chances are very important, and oftentimes we get second chances. There are times when we don't get second chances, but God is very merciful, and he usually gives us second chances, third chances, fourth chances, and so on. I'm probably into the hundreds right now myself on chances, right? I think some of you you're probably a little bit better than I am, but I thank him for all those second chances. So we're going to be kind of going over some of these examples of what a second chance looks like, not only for Israel as a people, but what it looks like for individuals as well. So in this, the book of Joshua, in chapter 2, Israel has a second chance of getting to the promised land, right? And we'll go over their first attempt and what happened there. How come they did not cross over? And what is the second attempt? What they're trying to do with this second attempt? And in this second attempt here, Joshua is kind of taking over the mission. We know that God is leading his people, like always, but Joshua is kind of the one that's guiding the new march forward, and he's taking it very serious. And in chapter 2, we learn about him sending out two spies into a land that God has already told him that he has given him. He's saying, okay, this is the land I am giving to you. I want you to go in, and it's full of abundant things. It's full of wonderful things. This is yours. So the question that the lesson brings up, and that I think a lot of us would want to understand too, is, okay, if God gave you this land, if God has predestined his people to be here and it has said, okay, this is where I want you to be, you're going to cross over here, why would anybody have to send out any spies? Why would you have to go check out the land? You know, is it offensive to God that he sent spies over to check it out? To scope out the military presence, to go and scope out the different people that are there, the land that is there, where is there water, is there food? All right, was that in any way offensive to God? Right, and in life sometimes we know that God gives us things, but it's wise for us to still check things out as well, to be able to get an understanding. So in no way, shape, or form is God offended in them sending out these spies just to scope out the land. And we'll see a couple examples later on as we go into the lesson. This is just kind of the introduction on what is going on. So right now in chapter 2, we find God's people. They're at the borders. They're ready to cross over. But before that, they're going to, again, the second time, they're going to send spies over to be able to quickly just check out. And when you're a spy, the main thing that a spy does is it goes over without being seen, without being acknowledged, right? That's the main mission. You don't want people to know that you're there. And we'll get into that here covering Joshua chapter 2 in this lesson today. So in this lesson today, we're going to be going over two of the most fascinating stories that are in the book of Joshua, and they're wonderful. I love them. I love the book of Joshua, and I'm glad we're going to be spending a quarter studying the book of Joshua. So now that we've got kind of the basic understanding, the introduction out of the way, let's go ahead, if you have your lessons, go ahead and turn to the Sunday, which is titled Second Chance, right? We knew we were going to be talking about second chances, so the title is Second Chances. And it has us read several areas in the Bible, starting off with reading Joshua 2 verse 1, and then it has us go to a couple of chapters in Numbers to read from there. And, you know, I know that a lot of you may be familiar with these stories, but I do want to read a lot of these verses because I do know that some of us are very familiar, but there are some who could be watching or listening today that might not understand all this. So I want to give at least a little bit of background and read some of those verses. It's not too long. So the question at the top, it has us read these sections, which we're going to read, and it gives us a question. So I always like to go over the question before I usually get into the reading. And the question is, why would Joshua start the mission off conquering the promised land by sending out spies? So the lesson takes us to read Joshua chapter 2, verse 1, and it says this, "Now Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out two men from Acacia Grove to spy secretly, saying, 'Go view the land, especially Jericho.' So when they went and came to the house of the harlot named Rahab and lodged there." So it's very simple. It says it there in the text, right? They're going to view the land, just to scope everything out. Remember, this is a new area for them, right? An area that they're going to be going into. And for me, I travel a lot for work, and I go to a lot of remote places because we do installation of monitoring equipment that is remote out in the middle of nowhere. And usually before I go out on a mission, I have the address, but before I have the address, I like to get on Google Maps, or I like to kind of check it out, especially the terrain, because I don't know sometimes if my vehicle is even going to get there, because sometimes you need four-wheel drive. So before I go anywhere, I just like to go and scope it out, right? Back then, they didn't have Google Maps, so they couldn't just check out the topography, and they couldn't just go ahead and go over and look at Jericho. They had to actually go send out spies, kind of create a map. And then when they came back, I was like, we can go this way. You know, this is a nice area. Here's how we get to Jericho. Right, so basically what they were doing is they were planning it out. They're just getting eyes on the land, laying everything out, because they're not just crossing over and going into the land with you know, a handful of people, there's quite a bit of people that are going to be crossing over. So they're just scoping it out. The lesson also has us read Numbers chapter 3, verses 1 through 2, and it says this. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. For each from each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, every one a leader among them. So we see in the beginning, when they are going to attempt to cross over the first time, God actually tells them to send people over to spy out the land. He's saying, okay, I want you to go into this land. This land is going to be yours, but please go check it out beforehand. See what you're getting into. See all of the wonderful things that I have prepared for you over there on the land. So Joshua is now attempting to lead the people to cross over, and he is basically just following God's instructions on what he did the first time, which is great. If God said to send out spies the first time, Joshua's like, hey, I'm going to send out spies, but I'm just going to send out two, because we'll learn about what happened with sending out some of the other spies. And we'll get into that right now. So the lesson also has us read Numbers chapter 13, verses 25 through 28, and then verse 33. But I'm going to add in verse 30 because I think it's really important for us to read that as well. So Numbers chapter 13, starting with verse 25. And they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. That's a good amount of time to get a lay of the land, right? Verse 26, now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran and Kadesh. They brought back word to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Then he told them and said, we went to the land where you sent us. It truly flows with milk and honey. And this is its fruit. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. And then verse 30, this is the one that I added in here that wasn't in the lesson, but I think it's very important. It says, then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, let us go up at once and take possession of it. For we are well able to overcome it. That verse that the lesson didn't talk about, it has us go and skip down to verse 33, which most of us are going to read all the way through that, right? Not skip. But it says in verse 33 here, it says, here we saw the giants. And then it says there, the descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And we were in their sight. So basically, it's saying here that they returned after going out and spying the land. There was a lot of fruit. There was big fruit. There was plenty in that land. There were wonderful things. It was the exact land that you would think that God would promise to his people. Flowing with milk and honey. It's just abundance. It's a fruitful land. It's a wonderful land. And that is what they find on the other side. And then at one point in verse 30, it says, okay, yes, we want to, let's go conquer this land. Let's go into it. Even though they heard that there were giants there, there were large people and fortified cities. But then in verse 33, they're just like, they considered themselves small, like little grasshoppers, that they were nothing. Right? So then they didn't want to go. So everything was as they would have imagined for the land. But there was this one thing. This second report that came in was talking about how big the people that were there and how fortified the cities were. And they were scared. They were scared of those people. Even though that God had promised them this land, even though that they knew that God was going to be with them, they were scared of these people. And that's what inhibited them from going and crossing over the first time. So now let's go, what the lesson tells us is to read Numbers chapter 14. Let's see what happens here in the end. Because, right, we just have this confrontation. They just see how wonderful this land is. But somebody really points out that we are up against it with these massive people there. And they're scared. So Numbers chapter 14, the next chapter, verses 1 through 12. It says, so all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children become victims? Would it be better for us to return to Egypt? So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. Verse 5. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. But Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, who are among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, we passed through to spy out, or the land we passed out to spy is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Our protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. And then verse 10, and all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? And how long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have provided among them? I will strike them with the pestilence and dishearten them. I will make you a nation greater and mightier than they. So we see here that right before going into the promised land, they see such great things, but they automatically, right away, they forget all of the greatness, all of the goodness, and they focus on what they should not be focusing on. They want to even return to slavery. Rather than go and have faith that God is going to lead them to conquer these people, fear got in the way. They were supposed to see these great things and not worry about the enemy. But they did the opposite. They worried about the enemy and forgot about what they had already seen. So the first report, they were already ready to go. That's why I wanted to read chapter or verse 30 for you, because it says there that they were ready to go. They said, okay, let's go and conquer this land. But then that second report came out from a different group of people, and now they said it can't be done. We can't defeat these people. We have to stay. Where are we going to go? Are we going to return? And now they're wanting to even stone the leaders, to kill the leaders. They're focusing on the wrong issue, on the wrong part. You know, sometimes as people, because God is guiding us in our lives, sometimes we think that it's going to be easy. That God is going to open things up and it's going to be easy for us to be able to conquer and to be able to do things. But that's not always the case. We usually learn more when things are hard, when things are difficult, when we have to work through things. So God is giving them a land, and it's a wonderful land, and there are some obstacles. And basically the obstacle that they are struggling with is the faith that God is going to help them. How is God going to be able to help them defeat giants, to defeat fortified cities? They're just a people in the wilderness, so they don't have much, right? How is God going to do that? So the issue that they're struggling with is faith that God is going to come through for them. So Joshua was one of the people who had previously gone into the other land to scope out the land. And now that God is leading him, he wants to send these two spies over to check out the land, to follow kind of what God had done before, but he wants other people to go ahead and get eyes on this land. So this time, Joshua sends out two spies to be able to look at the land and to be able to get that second chance, right? The title of this, of Sunday's lesson, is Second Chances. And as we look at the second chance that God is giving Israel to go ahead and cross over into the promised land, the lesson has us take a look at somebody else who has been given a second chance. And you guys may be familiar with this. It's the story of Peter. So in John chapter 18, verses 16 through 18, it says this: "But Peter stood at the door outside," right? This is after Jesus had died, right afterwards. And he said, "Then the other disciple who was known to the high priest went out and spoke to her who kept the door and brought Peter in. Then the servant girl who kept the door said to Peter, 'You are not also one of this man's disciples, are you?' And Peter said, 'I'm not. I'm not one of the disciples.'" In verse 18, it says, "Now the servants and the officers who had made fire of coals stood there, for it was cold, and they warmed themselves. Peter stood with them and warmed himself." So I always like to imagine the scene and try and picture myself in the scene. So I see Peter. He's down on his luck. Jesus had told him before, "You're going to deny me." Peter's like, "Yeah, no, it's not going to happen." First person asks, "Hey, weren't you with that guy?" He goes, "No, it wasn't me." And there's just this awkward silence where he probably wants to leave, but he's cold and he doesn't know where to go. So he's standing there with these people getting warm by the fire. And so I think about, have you ever been in the situation? I think we've all been in the situation where somebody lies to you and they know they lied to you and they're still there. And you're stuck in that awkward spot. Because he's like, were you? And Peter's like, "No, it wasn't me." And she's like, "Yeah, I kind of think it was. I just kind of asked because I wanted to make sure." And so Peter's still just standing there, right, in this awkward silence. And Peter knows that he lied. The woman probably knows he lied too, because, you know, she recognized Peter. That's why she was asking. So, you know, that was just me trying to get into the story, right, trying to imagine just this awkward situation that Peter finds himself in. And then again, a couple of verses later, in John chapter 18, verses 25 and 26, again, it says, "Now Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. Therefore they said to him, 'You are not also one of his disciples, are you?' And he denied it and said, 'I am not.'" So again, right, the second time, "Wait, weren't you one of the disciples, one of those who followed him faithfully?" "Nope, wasn't me. Must have been somebody else. I must have a lookalike." Second time, verse 26 and 27. "One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of him whose ear Peter cut off." You know, if somebody cuts off your ear, you're probably going to remember who that person is, you know? "And he said, 'Did I not see you in the garden with him?' Then Peter denied again, and immediately a rooster crowed." So we see here this opportunity that Peter had to officially label himself and be known as a follower of Jesus Christ, and he denies him. He said, that wasn't me. What could the people have been asking? We don't know, right? Was it to condemn him? Or maybe did they have questions about the man that he followed? And he missed this wonderful opportunity. Instead of being proud and full of honor to be called one who followed Jesus Christ, the Messiah, he denied him. Not once, not twice, but three times. And all three times probably crushed his heart to deny, but for trying to save himself, that's why he did it. He was trying to save himself. He didn't know if he was going to be killed next, or he didn't know what, but instead of being proud and standing up strong and saying, yeah, that was me, I am him, he lied. So then afterwards, after denying Jesus three times, he has the opportunity of a second chance. And this time, the person that is going to ask him is Jesus. Follow along with me if you would like in John chapter 21, verses 15 through 19. And it says, so when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? And he said, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And he said, Jesus says to him, feed my lambs. Verse 16, he said to him again a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, tend my sheep. Verse 17, and he said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Most assuredly, I say to you, when you were younger, you girded yourself and walked where you wished. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will gird you and carry you where you do not wish. This he spoke, signifying that death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, follow me. So right at the end, after all of this, Jesus is the one that goes up to him and he gives him a second chance to be identified and to know. Jesus wants to know, do you love me? Giving him a second chance. So he asks him three times. And it can be kind of annoying when somebody asks you the same question multiple times. And Peter, I don't think, was annoyed, but he was just thinking, he's like, Lord, don't you know? You know I love you. But Jesus wants to really make an impact. Okay, if you love me. And then so after each of the three times that Jesus asked him, do you love me? He says three different things in response to that. Jesus answers and says, then feed my lambs, then tend my sheep, then follow me. So if you love me, feed my lambs, tend my sheep, and follow me. And this is what those who follow Jesus should be doing, right? That's what we should be doing. God is a God of second chances and even more. And the Bible calls this second chance grace. Let's move on into Monday. So second chances. Monday, the title of Monday is Value in Unexpected Places. And at the top of the lesson, it gives us a question. It says, what do these texts tell us about Rahab? So we'll go right into it and read. Joshua chapter 2, verses 2 through 11. So starting with verse 2, it says this. And it was told to the king of Jericho, saying, behold, men have come here tonight from the children of Israel to search out the country. So the king of Jericho said to Rahab, saying, sent to Rahab, saying, bring out the men who have come to you, who have entered your house, for they have come to search out all the country. The woman took the two men and hid them. And she said, yes, the men came to me, but I do not know where they were from. And it happened as the gate was being shut, when it was dark, that the men went out. Where the men went, I do not know. Pursue them quickly, for you may overtake them. And then in verse 6 it says, but she had brought them to the roof and hidden them with the stalks of flax, which she had laid in order on the roof. Then the men pursued them by the road to the Jordan and to the fords. As soon as those who pursued them have gone out, the gate was shut. Or they shut the gate. Verse 8. Now before they laid down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the terror of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land are faint-hearted because of you. For we heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites, who were on the other side of Jordan, who you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we heard these things, our hearts melted. Neither did there return or there remain any more courage in anyone because of you. For the Lord your God, who is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. So we see here, right? The lesson asks us, what do these texts tell us about Rahab? And the lesson itself points out that Rahab is a liar. That's what it does. It points out straight, Rahab's a liar. But she did it because she was trying to help God's men, his people, the spies that were sent. So, you know, the lesson gets a little bit more into Rahab being a liar, but she probably could have done it another way, right? We get in situations where sometimes lying is the easiest thing that comes to us, when really there are other ways around it, right? There are ways around having to lie. She probably could have gone over it in a different way. But if we look at Rahab, Rahab is identified as a harlot. She's no saint, right? She's no wonderful person that is known for her godly manners. She's a sinner. You know, she has lived a whole completely different life. So sometimes the lying just kind of comes naturally. But as we get to walk in our lives, right, all of a sudden these lies and these sins start to slip away, and we don't use that as a tactic anymore in our conversations. We kind of get past it. So, you know, to me, the lesson points out a little bit more that she's a liar. I give her kind of a pass for now, right, on that, because I think, you know, as she builds her relationship with God, she's not going to do that anymore. So she gets a pass, and she was doing it for good, right? So that's the first thing we kind of notice. She's a liar, but you know, what sinner in her state isn't? But the second point that we know and that we see is she does know God. She knows who God is. And she knows of the history of how God has helped the Israelites going from their journeys out of Egypt. She knows all of that. So she knows what's going on. She knows God. And the third thing that's kind of pointed out here is that she believes in God. She believes in those powers. She believes that the land that she is in is going to then be theirs. And she has faith, right? She knows that God is the God of heaven and earth. what most of the people in her area don't believe, she believes. So then the lesson has us read Hebrews 11:31, which is our memory text. It says, "By faith the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace." So there it is right there, right? To identify who Rahab is, she is a woman of faith. She has faith. She's not a woman of faith. She's beginning to have that faith. She has faith in that God that she has heard of. She doesn't have an intimate relationship with him yet, but she has heard of him and she has faith and she believes. She believes that the invasion is going to come and that land is going to be theirs. It says in James chapter 2, verse 25, it says, "Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way?" So it talks about, right, her faith, it led her to take action, to be able to help these men. She had consequences if it would have been found out that she would have helped these men. So the lesson says, and I really like this, it says in here, the lesson says that even in all this sinful place, this horrible place that she lived in, God saw a spark of faith from which she could be saved. That's all God needs. It's just a spark. That's all you need to start a big fire, is just a spark. So God, when he saw that small spark of faith, that was good enough for him. He was able to use that. And we need to remember that too, right? All we need is a spark. God can work with a spark. So she recognized that she had two options: continue her life and die, or she should surrender in faith and live. And we have those same options today. Same options she had, right? Because there's a war going on out there, and we can either choose the path to follow God and believe that he's going to come, and believe that he's going to deliver us and help us, or we can still stay in the world and die. We have those both options. Both those options are available to us. I want to choose the one that with the path of God and follow him. I've tried the other one. It doesn't really work. So Tuesday, let's move on into Tuesday. The title of Tuesday is New Allegiance. And it has us read Joshua chapter 2, verses 12 through 21, and then Exodus chapter 12, verses 13, 22, and 23. And it asks us, what do we understand from these texts in Exodus about the agreement between these spies and Rahab? So I don't think we have enough time to read all of this with Joshua. I wish we did have time, or else we wouldn't be able to cover everything. But basically what's happening here is Rahab and the spies from God, they come to an agreement. Basically, it's a kindness agreement. They say, "You help us, we help you." That's basically what the agreement is. And both parties are down for this agreement. They're saying, "Okay, let's do this. We're going to help you, and you are going to be helping us." And it says here, the men even say, "This isn't just for you, Rahab. This pact, this agreement that we're coming with, you can be saved and your family can be saved, but your family must be with you." So that's kind of the synopsis, because we don't have time to read all of these verses here. And then basically it's saying, "Our lives for yours," is what it says in Joshua 2:14, basically, "Our lives for your lives." And then at the end, it says that in order to identify that she is still in agreement when the people of God come back, that she has to hang a scarlet cord on her window in order for that when God's people are coming and the destruction of Jericho comes down and happens, that there is an outward signal, an outward symbol or sign that she is still in agreement and she is still part of that pact that they have taken. So that's what she does. After the men leave, she puts that red scarlet cord outside on her window. Does that kind of ring a bell with what has been done in the past? And I also love that, you know, it says here that that her family can be a part of this as well. But her family needs to be brought in to her house. So we will have time to read part of the Exodus, because this is the ring a bell part that we know of. It says Exodus chapter 12, verse 13, it says, "Now the blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be on you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt." Right? So we see in both of these cases, in the case of Rahab, she's putting this scarlet cord out on her window, an outward sign that she is still in agreement, just like what happened in Passover, where they had to sacrifice and put the blood on the outside so that when God came through, he identified, okay, these are my people who follow me. All right, so this is a kindness deal, this agreement that they have. And I'll skip over this. It does talk about how when God gives is giving them instructions on when they go into the promised land, they are to destroy all of the other people and kill them and not have any agreements with them. But it's interesting that because of Rahab's faith, God allows her life to be spared. Not all, not the whole country of Jericho, right? The whole city, just her because of her faith. So she happens to be from Canaan, where it kind of talks about in Deuteronomy. We don't have too much time to read that, right? There's a whole big thing, a controversy between faith and works, right? And God calls us to be obedient. We are going to be saved by our faith and by grace, right? Not by our works. But at the same time, if you don't have faith and you don't believe, then you're going to act one way. When you believe and when you have faith and when you have that relationship with Christ, it's just natural that these works are going to come out, not because of you, but because of God. You're going to want to share what you know with other people. You're going to want to be more helpful. You're going to want to stop doing things that you've done in the past, because the Holy Spirit is going to be in your heart and is going to be saying, don't do that anymore. And you're going to say, I don't want to do that. So we're not saved by our works, but we're kind of not saved if we don't show works as well, because that means that we don't really have that relationship with God. Okay, let's turn into Wednesday. We could go more on that. Let's turn into Wednesday. Conflicting values. So this is an interesting one, because it talks about So we see the story that we have with Rahab, right? Or it was kind of a kindness act. You help me, I'll help you. And then we get into the story about the Gibeonites, right? And they were in the promised land. When they crossed over, we're talking Joshua chapter 9 here, when the Israelites, when God's people ended up coming over into the land, there were a people called the Gibeonites, and they had heard of God's people. And they kind of had an understanding of what was going to happen to them once they got closer. So these people, what they did was they were going to gather together to try and fight against God's people. They said, okay, we got to fight these guys because they're coming for us, because we know that that's what they do. But instead of fighting them, they decided to change tactics. So in Joshua chapter 9, verse 4, it says this: they worked craftily and went and pretended to be ambassadors. And they took old sacks of their donkeys, their old wineskins torn and mended, old patched sandals on their feet, old garments on themselves, and all the bread for their provision was dry and moldy. So they decided to dress up as a people that had come from far away distance. And they said, okay, we're going to go and we're going to meet God's people. We're going to talk to Joshua and we're going to pretend that, yeah, we're from a long ways. They brought them this moldy bread and they said, look, this was freshly baked when we left our land, and look at how moldy it is now. So they're trying to, instead of fighting them, they know God's behind them. They're just like, hey, we're going to trick them. We're going to trick them into being able to be in agreement. We don't want to let them know we live right next door, but we want to get a pact with them, an agreement with them, in this time. So long story short, there's this kind of back and forth between these people, the Gibeonites, and Joshua and the people of God. And then finally, in the end, they're kind of convinced that these people are from far away. They go, okay, we'll stay away from you. We'll make kind of an alliance and a pact with you guys. And it says this in Joshua chapter 9, verse 14. It says, then the men of Israel took some of their provisions, but they did not ask the counsel of the Lord. So when making this agreement with these people, God told them, take this new land, it's all yours, and destroy the other people. Don't mingle with them, don't live with them, you need to destroy them. But they did not seek counsel. They were craftily deceived to think they were far away, and then they make a pact with these people. And then 3 days later, they find out, oops, these people that we just made an agreement with not to harm them are really our next door neighbors. So now what do? They had already sworn by God, you know, under God, to have this relationship where they wouldn't kill them. They wouldn't attack them. How can they go back on it now? I mean, I would have probably said, you know what? This happened, and we didn't know you tricked us, so the pact is done. We're attacking you. You guys deceived us. But they didn't do it. The Gibeonites acknowledged the power of God and acknowledged how strong and guided God's people were, so they tricked them. So we ask the similarities, right, between similarities and differences between the situation with Rahab and the situation with these people. Rahab had faith. The Gibeonites just knew that they were going to be killed, so they snuck in there and did something sneaky, right? Their motives were different on wanting to create kind of an alliance and an understanding, my life for your life. And they both knew about God's people. The sad thing here is that we have a leader and we have a people, a chosen people of God, that when they were in a situation, in a land that God just gave them, they didn't seek his counsel. And they made a decision without God. And us to this day, sometimes we're too busy, or we think that we have it, that we have understanding, and we don't seek the counsel of the Lord when we make decisions. And that can be devastating for us, right? God still finds ways. We're gonna learn about that real quick here on Thursday. God still finds ways, but it can be a little difficult. So turn to Thursday with me. I always want to try, and there's more to study, but I always want to at least try and get through at least every day a portion of it. So Thursday is Surprising Grace, and it's a continuation of the story we just went over. It says, it asks us in the lesson, how did Joshua's situation combine justice with grace? And I love this. This is great here. So let us read Joshua chapter 9, verses 21 through 27. It says, and the rulers, and starting with verse 21, it says, and the rulers said to them, this is the rulers of the people of God, the Israelites, to the Gibeonites, let them live, but let them be woodcutters and water carriers for all the congregation, as the rulers had promised them. Then Joshua called for them. He spoke to them, saying, why have you deceived us? For we were very far from you when you dwell near us. Now, therefore, you are cursed, and none of you shall be freed from being slaves, woodcutters and water carriers for the house of my God. And it says in 24, so they answered Joshua and said, because your servants were clearly told that the Lord your God commanded his servants Moses to give you all the land and to destroy all the inhabitants of the land from before you, Therefore, we were very much afraid of our lives because of you, and we have done this thing. Verse 25, and now here we are in your hands. Do with us as it seems good and right to do to us. So he did to them and delivered them out of the hands of the children of Israel so that they did not kill them. And that day Joshua made them woodcutters and water carriers for the congregation, for the altar of the Lord, in the place which he would choose even to this day. I don't know if you caught that, but basically what he did was he made them a part of their worshiping community. That's what the woodcarvers and the water carriers were. They made them a part of their worshiping community. So day after day, these people were involved with worshiping the Lord and how the Israelites were doing it. It says here in the last paragraph, it says, God's ultimate purpose is not to punish sinners, but to see them repent and grant them mercy. This lesson is about second chances. And we learn that second chances is the grace of God. So he gives us all second chances. It's our decision whether we're going to take advantage of it or not. Thank you so much for joining us today. Next week, we will be covering lesson number 3 out of the lesson of Joshua. It is called Memorials of Grace. And if you have enjoyed this lesson, you'd like a copy for yourself or to be able to give to somebody, you can get a free CD or DVD of this lesson. You can call us up at 916-457-6511 or email us at csh@saccentral.org and give us the offer C202-541. We'd love to be able to send you a free CD or DVD, and we would love to have you return to be with us next week to continue our study in the book of Joshua.